Welcome to the Global Product Management Talk. This is Cindy Faye Solomon, delighted to be your host today on April 30th, 2014. We are broadcasting live out of the Oakland Hills from Studio132.com with our six-time Emmy-winning song producer and musician, D.Z. Lewis. I'm delighted to have Scott Jackish in the studio with me today. And we are going to talk about how far into the cloud businesses can expect to go, as well as global megatrends, as well as futurist innovations. Scott is the principal at Globalized Networks, and he's a futurist. I met him at the Oakland Futurist Meetup a few years ago now. Yeah, he's been an inspiration, and I've learned so much at those meetings.
Feeling very inspirational this morning.
Well, you know, I attended the Futurist meeting meetup before I started the Startup Product Meetup.
Well, that's great, yeah. So you learned about meetup that way.
I did.
Okay.
And
you've been hacking it ever since.
I've been hacking it ever since. So before we go into depth about Scott and what we're here to talk about today, let me do a shout out to the new members of the Startup Product Movement and the community, which is growing in Latin America. Welcome to the new communities in Chile, and there's now three communities in Colombia, and Brazil will be coming on board soon. And very exciting, our startup product community partners, Distilled Innovation in Colombia, has started a Google Hangout series. They did the first one yesterday.
So a lot of startup action.
It will be
action
on Tuesdays. And so we'll be grabbing, posting the video. It's done in Spanish.
There you go. I would hope
so. We're there talking with startups in the Colombia and South America community. And we'll be grabbing the audio and posting it on the Global Product Management Talk channel. So you'll be able to listen to it on iTunes. We're broadcasting live, and then this goes out to iTunes, it goes out to Stitcher, it goes out to Blurberry, all the podcast platforms, as well as in the Google Play Store. I put together a Google app. It's PRODMGMTTALK. Just search for that. That is our hashtag, PRODMGMTTALK, and it is our Twitter handle. So if you're tweeting today, you can follow the tweets and tweet out to us at PRODMGMTTALK. The Global Product Management Talk is a top 10 business podcast on the Blog Talk Radio Network. I host and produce it. We have regular scheduled broadcast discussions of vital issues affecting professionals passionate about product excellence, product management, startups, marketing, innovation, and methodology. By the way, I'm Cindy Faye Solomon. You can follow me on Twitter at Cindy F. Solomon, S-O-L-O-M-O-N, and you can get in touch with me. The easiest way is to shoot me an email to cindy@startupproduct.com. If you'd like to be a speaker, if you would like to sponsor broadcasts, or get involved with the Startup Product Movement for Product Excellence. So this week, we are brought to you by our premier sponsor, the AIPMM, the Association of International Product Marketing and Management. They were founded in 1998, and they promote worldwide excellence in product management education with trainings, certifications, professional network opportunities, and they provide corporate members an assurance that their product professionals are operating at peak performance. Go to AIPMM.com and check out their Friday morning webinar series under webinars. Follow them on Twitter at AIPMM, where they post international product management and product marketing management positions. And they are offering a full scholarship to the upcoming May 12th and May 13th Product Innovation Leadership Training that's happening in Bellevue, Washington. It is a intensive that results in a Certified Innovation Leader credential. It offers 16 PDUs for project managers, and it is being taught by Chad McAllister, a PhD, who's been a frequent guest of the show, has written several books on innovation, and he developed this curriculum and teaches it at the university level. So if you can get yourself up to Bellevue, Washington, go to the AIPMM. The link is also on the startup product. It's on our meetups posted with today's event, and you can apply for that scholarship today. Do it. There's limited ones available, but I have been through the training, and I will soon achieve the certification as well. So thank you, the AIPMM. Hey, check out the Webcast Digest for daily curated educational webcasts, webinars, and free online events for your continuous learning. Because, you know, as busy product professionals, we have to stay up with what's happening in our industries, in other domains, as well as with new products and new offerings. The Webcast Digest curates across verticals organized into 8 different categories, free online events that are provided by vendors, by experts, by thought leaders. And so you can, when you subscribe, it's only $5 a month. Go to startupproduct.com/webcast. You'll see the full calendar, and the calendar of events is available free. However, if you want the individual URLs to actually sign up and attend those and get the replays, just subscribe and you'll get all that information as well as archives of past events. Okay, coming up tonight in the San Francisco community, Startup Product Talk San Francisco, we are talking about the Lean Canvas with Dennis Britton, and bring your Lean Canvas. Come learn about how to develop your MVP, do customer development. It's an intro to a full-day workshop, but we'll actually go deep tonight. We're meeting at General Assembly in San Francisco. Go to sfproducttalks.com to find out more about that and register. It's a really vibrant, great community, and a lot of great things happening. Just go to startupproduct.com to follow the blog. Go to startupproduct.com/calendar and look at upcoming events, not only from Startup Product, but from our communities. And we now have such a great network and worldwide community that conferences and other great events are offering discounts specifically for our community, such as the Node.js training coming up down in Mountain View at the Coding House. Go to startupproduct.com/calendar. Check out that and other great events coming up. Where the details for the discounts, and some are even offering free tickets. Okay, so thanks for hanging in there. Let me tell you about our guest today. Scott Jackish has been working in computer systems administration since 1999. He's worked at Kaiser Permanente, Silicon Energy, and Itron. In 2005, he started an IT services company called Globalized Networks. His certifications include MCSE, CCNA, and CompTIA Security Plus. So in IT, certifications are respected.
And it's not clear that that's true. Especially not these. These are fairly old.
And project management certifications are they're actually codified, you know, for government regulations. Product management certifications are fairly new. They represent that people are committed to their, you know, advancing their career and staying up on the trends.
Okay.
And I see more and more certifications, you know, coming on board.
I'm going back into my Microsoft certifications because we're a Microsoft partner, and so we have to maintain our certifications, and I'm doing it for Office 365 and for Server 2012. And actually it's fun and it's interesting to dig into all the nooks and crannies of the technology and sort of be forced to learn that. So
I actually had become a Microsoft developer when I first developed the app, the PRODMGMTTALK. which is basically an app for listening to this podcast.
Right, okay.
So you can get all the archives, you see the press releases that get flighted,
get more information about the speakers. It's another channel to get your content out there.
So I've gotten certified, and that's something you have to maintain yearly, and you have to constantly update, and I think, you know, Google Play was the easiest place to get the app. They don't care. they'll post it.
Right.
Windows and Apple had a lot more constraints.
And they don't care if you're Bitcoin mining
right, exactly.
on people's apps or
exactly.
Or
I'm sure that's subject to change.
That just came out recently.
So more about you. You have been. Let's see. You're interested in futurism and science fiction. You've been building and maintaining internal IT environments since 1999. You enjoy helping startups solve the broad range of technological challenges they face.
Cool.
Yeah, your goal is to provide the highest value for the lowest cost possible by finding the right balance between internal systems and cloud services. And you're also... You know, you say you're an aspiring futurist, but I'd say you are. We're all aspiring.
Okay. Well, there are people that have been in the scene a lot longer than I have. You know.
I contend they're still aspiring. So your blog is at oaklandfuturist.com.
Yeah.
And the futurist meetup we talked about is at meetup.com East Bay Futurist.
East Bay Futurist. That's right.
And you can connect with Scott on Twitter at globalize_net. That's globalize_net. And in a moment I will take some time to put out some tweets. So I invited Scott to talk about the cloud. And so just as an intro to cloud computing, it enables organizations to consolidate and share computing resources, eliminates on-site physical hardware, it replaces on-site equipment with virtual non-dedicated machines, unlocks information behind firewalls to enable improved transparency and engagement with end users. Cloud computing is dramatically accelerating the shift from IT-based products to business-oriented services. However, not all applications and services are well-suited to cloud solutions, and the cloud does not always provide immediate ROI or lower expenses. Now, if you read about Amazon, AWS services, and if you read, you know, about all the cloud vendors, they would have you believe that everyone should be in the cloud, and it's totally applicable for every size organization. So it's interesting to point out, you know, from that is not the case.
It's clearly not the case, and there's a wide range of use cases where it's not correct, actually. I mean, I think they gave an example just recently of if they were doing a performance analysis, I just read, between the different platforms. And they were saying that you could buy a computer that had a comparable performance or better performance to the 8-core offering that was given by the virtual machine offering. This is the infrastructure as a service type of offering with AWS. You could get that for $600, but you would pay that $600 in the first month. Now, of course, you have to pay for hosting, you have to pay for internet and power and things like that. But infrastructure as a service, I think, actually works better for companies that are changing their workload very rapidly. So if you're going to build out, you need to build out a lot of functionality and then have that functionality go away, have that compute power go away. Batch jobs are a great example of that. We have a biotech that does a lot of genomic processing, and maybe they'll need to crunch the numbers on some genomes, and that might take 100 computers, 200 computers, several hours of work, but then they're done. And then, you wouldn't want to have a data center full of hundreds of computers just to run a batch. And so that's a great use case like that. But if your computer has to be, if your resources have to be available all the time, 24/7, and are fairly static and are not changing a lot, then you're better off building them and managing them yourself, unless you don't have the capability to do that. And that's where, and startups are like that, right? So startups are another case where they don't have the engineers on staff to build that and maintain that infrastructure. And so going with an Amazon-type offering does make sense in that case. But, you know, I'm an IT guy, so I want them people to hire IT guys and for there to be for there to be work for us, you know, in the future. But I see this. You know, we see this happening. It used to be that I would be building systems at client sites and putting our hands on physical hardware, and, you know, here it is. And that's not where the future lays in my own business of, you know, system administration, systems integration of what we do. And so to keep up with that, we have to become aware of what's the goal is delivering business solutions, right? I mean, that's what people need. They need business solutions. And so however that happens, I want to be there helping with that. Because this is where I was talking about a little bit earlier about this question between the hedgehog and the fox, these cognitive approaches to how do you solve these problems. I consider myself sort of a generalist as opposed to a specialist. And the good thing about a generalist is that we can get a lay of the land. We can see what are the broad range of offerings that are available, and we can help the clients pick out where, you need to do this. Well, what is the best combination of offerings that are out there that we can find to put together for that? As opposed to a specialist who would drill down into and know everything about, say, Hyper-V virtualization, or know absolutely everything about some specific technology. To me, that's best left up to the vendors. Do you know what I mean? If I need an Office 365 expert, I'm going to call Microsoft. And they're going to have someone who that's all they do, right? Or not just that. All they do is exchange, you know, some specific thing.
But the generalist has to know enough about the specifics to give the right advice, as well as to oversee the implementation.
Yes.
Because a vendor will take you down the road they want you to go.
Yes. Exactly. There are other things, too, that a specialist can... So yeah, there are differences, right? So we had a client that they built a subnet and it was a specific thing. They understood this virtualization platform, but they didn't understand the big picture. And when they built all these servers on the subnet, they couldn't get to the internet because they hadn't added a rule in the firewall. Like they were just focused on this one part of the network that they understood, and not understanding like the entire path of how these systems would get out to the internet. So they weren't getting updates and things like that. So having a sense of the big picture is important, and I think that these two paradigms are I actually run into them a lot. Like in the Less Wrong community, they talk about it in terms of exploring versus exploiting resources, right? The explorer is sort of like the fox. It's sort of that's another paradigm that you'll see, the fox and the hedgehog, where the fox has a lot of little ideas and the hedgehog has one big idea. I think academia is a case where you have to be a hedgehog. You have to specialize, and you have to write your PhD in, you know, a very specific...
Publish.
You have
publish
to,
or die.
You have to publish or die, and it has to be very specific, right?
It's going to
be like the metabolism of C. elegans, the sugar metabolism of C. elegans.
Right, and it has to be something that hasn't been done before in order to establish, you know, be established as a thought leader.
Right, yeah. So when we talk about cloud, I mean, that's why there was this a great graphic that I just saw recently. We can go back if you want to go back and just talk about what are the categories of cloud offerings,
yep.
Right? And so you can picture this pyramid at the bottom of the pyramid we have infrastructure as a service, and that's where we have basically virtualized computers in a cluster so that they're highly available. And the people that offer that are like AWS, Amazon, GoGrid, Rackspace. And then above that, and people don't talk about the layer above that, there's also something called platform as a service. And that's more focused at developers. And so that's Azure. The original Azure offering is an example of that. App Engine by Google is an example of that. And these are platforms for developers so that developers can write code that just runs sort of in these platforms. Right, you don't have to worry about having a computer, and you can just sort of, or what the computer itself is doing. You're just sort of writing to the APIs, and then above that we have which I think has been around for a lot longer is the software as a service, and that's where we see Google Apps, we see Salesforce, we see Office 365, which I think is a really strong offering right now, iCloud is interesting because it kind of crosses between that software as a service and platform as a service, right? But what's customer facing is really the end solution, and when you go all the way down to the infrastructure service, that's sort of what sysadmins, people like like myself care about. And so that was that's a sort of way to sort of chop up what these offerings are. And so when we think about, I mean, cloud is a huge buzzword, and people are always asking about it and talking about what is cloud. And you know, I think that some of these pointy-haired bosses are get it in their head that they need to go to the cloud, and they're right to some degree, right? I mean, the I don't believe that all of the talk and all of the buzz in this area around cloud computing is hype. I don't believe it is hype. There's obviously some hype involved, but you know, it helps to understand. You have to look at and differentiate between what the different offerings are and where do they fit into what your business needs are. Does that make sense?
Totally.
Okay.
Totally. So I want to do a shout out to our great fans of the show who tune in very often and contribute greatly to the tweeting. Alicia Dixon, who says, the faithfuls are tuned in as usual. Great to see you, Alicia. And Gil Zibberfeld. And Alicia is coming in from the East Coast, and Gil, I believe, is coming in from Israel. So if you're following the hashtag #PODMGMTTALK, you can also converse with Alicia and Gil, who are probably also listening live because their tweets are totally relevant. So,
okay.
So thanks, you guys, and feel free to ask questions as well. So I have Scott giving us some foundation and the atmosphere of cloud computing, the current cloud atmosphere, and very interested in where you see it's going, and definitely want to, you know, talk about your futurist viewpoints as well.
Okay, yeah. Well, I think, well, let's start with the cloud. I think what we're seeing is definitely a consumerification, if that's a word, of IT services. And so we're getting to the point where providers are working harder and harder to sort of take the IT guy like myself out of the picture.
Right.
Right. And I don't blame people for wanting to get rid of the IT guy. We want this to be, you know, you remember, I don't know if you ever met David Snyder Joseph. He came to some of the futurist meetups. He was an excellent engineer. He top flight engineer. He worked at Google. He worked at Amazon. He quit Google to go work at SpaceX. But he had a lot of deep cloud knowledge, and he built these systems on the back end. And he said it's sort of this idea of it's similar to flying an airplane. Like when you take a commercial flight, you don't get to go and get in the pilot seat, right? You just go and get in your seat, and you're taken to that place. And it's extremely safe. It's safer than driving. When people drive themselves, they die much more frequently than when a professional flies you there, and there's a checklist and a whole team that makes sure the plane, that every part is working order. There's no team of technicians that checks your car before you go to work each day.
Right.
And so that was sort of the example. That was sort of the analogy that he used to describe why I'm going to be obsolete, right? Because I'm sort of like the guy that drives the car, right? And so that's why I listened to that very carefully, right? And so I said, well, what is the role then? What is the role of an IT person in this new world in which it's all hermetically sealed, the offerings are hermetically sealed, we don't get to see what, you know, you don't need to know what the server is or, you know, how much disk space you have left or all these things. And I realized that it's to sort of act as a guide or a Sherpa. There is actually a company called Cloud Sherpas. I think that's a great name, right? So how do we guide the business people into this world of all these offerings? Because there's a broad range of offerings. And what do you need? And where can these offerings fit to with what your business needs are? And I think that's where, and that's, you know, that's what I'm saying to other IT people. You know, this is where we have to go. We have to understand what the cloud is. We have to understand how to help our clients implement the cloud. You know, we're doing a lot of work right now with Office 365 migrations. We're getting people out of this, you know, on-site Exchange server where you have to worry about fault tolerance and you have to worry about disk space and you have to worry about bandwidth and all of these questions, maintenance windows and all of these things, and we're putting them up into the cloud and let Microsoft worry about all those. And a lot of these tools supposedly are available so that people can, you know, add their own user accounts. They can reset their own passwords. Of course, in the real world, that doesn't actually happen. Like in theory, the tool is simple enough that, you know, you could have a designated administrator on site and they would reset the passwords and they would all do that. They would do all that stuff. But that's another interesting thing is that they don't want to do that, right? Even if they have this much simplified interface and it's made the service has been made a prepackaged consumer type product, they still don't want to do it. And it's still too complex. They want to just tell someone do this and make it happen. So there's another space for, you know, very low-hanging fruit for IT people to actually just be the one that pushes the button, to be the operator, to go back and be the actual computer operator.
Yeah.
I'm talking a lot.
That's what I'm here for,
right? I'm here to talk.
I will talk all day.
I'll just keep going. And
originally, I had a co-host who would do the talking while I was tweeting.
You are tweeting madly away.
Yes.
I want to see, where do I go to see these tweets? I want to see where all these tweets are coming.
So, my suggestion is to use tweetchat.com. You have to sign in through your Twitter. And then you actually can plug in a hashtag. So if you plug in PRODMGMTTAO, okay, what it does is it filters from Twitter, and it just shows you the people that are using the hashtag.
Repeat that for me.
So go to TweetChat.
I'm at TweetChat, yeah, the hashtag .com, to follow, yeah.
And you have to sign in through your Twitter handle.
Okay.
So then it's going to comb
I'm doing it.
Twitter.
I'm doing it.
And the hashtag is PRODMGMTTALK.
That's a good one. That's actually a good one. Product management talk.
Unfortunately, it's quite long.
Right. Okay.
When you're limited.
But it makes perfect sense.
Very cool about TweetChat is it automatically appends the hashtag to all your tweets. So you can tweet right from there. And when I first started this, before we were broadcasting live, it was only on Twitter. There was no audio.
Right, right. Okay.
And I quickly learned that the thought leaders – you can talk or tweet. It's very hard to do both.
Right.
And that's why
I'll come in and
talk.
I'm
being rude.
Yeah.
I'm looking at my screen instead of looking at you. And then, of course, the community in South America keeps requesting that we also, you know, turn on Google Hangouts so they can see us talking.
Okay.
And that's like, that's
you're hesitant
the next.
To do that.
One more level of technology. We need another person here.
Get an avatar.
Right, right.
Okay.
So Gil says, going to the cloud is about getting rid of the IT guy. IT should just work. Right. It shouldn't need additional manpower to make it work.
It should just work.
It's invisible. So
that's funny. You know, it's interesting. So it's where did that phrase come from? It just works, right? That's like an Apple thing, right? And that's what's interesting to me in the Valley here in the Bay Area. We see like a lot of animosity, I think, toward Microsoft, and people are definitely Apple partisans. And I've got my MacBook Air right here, and I truly love it, and I've been on it for several years, even though I'm mostly a Windows guy. But one thing I will say about it should just work is it's interesting that that phrase came out of the Apple environment because that is a walled garden. And people criticize me for saying that, but the fact is...
No, they don't understand. I go way back. I'm open source and my DNA, and that's why I'm...
Right?
I worked at Apple, but I had a PC when I was at Apple.
That's interesting. So you know what I'm saying? Like it's great for everything to just work, and I would argue that it's easy. Not easy, but it's much more doable for everything to just work, quote-unquote just work, when you control the entire stack.
Right.
If I control the hardware, the software, I control the cloud service, I control everything in the stack, then everything's just going to work. And if it doesn't work, then it's on me. But Microsoft exists not in a walled garden. It exists in this crazy jungle called the real world. And they're like, so they interact with any number of computers and any number of software. I mean, you don't go to an app store to buy apps from Microsoft.
Right.
Right? I mean, you go to absolutely anybody. Right? Anybody builds their software.
Right.
Absolutely anybody builds your cloud services. And so this is a challenging environment, right? And that's why I guess I think that IT guys are important, or I see IT guys continuing to be important because the world is not going to converge on one massive walled garden. IT services will not just be one fully integrated, will never be, I will argue, will never be one, especially since Jobs is dead. If Jobs was still alive, that might have happened. But if Jobs is dead, we won't end up in this monolithic Apple world from top to bottom. What we're going to have is we're still going to be in the jungle, and we're going to have something that my business is called is systems integration. Okay, and if we think about what does that mean, it means integrating all these disparate systems, these non-homogeneous systems, into one working solution, and having things just work. Like I said, it's doable if it was a vertical stack, but when you have to go and get your Salesforce on one side, and then you have to have your Outlook, and then that's on a Mac, and then, oh, by the way, here's my card reader, and then, I have to print to this Kyocera printer or do something else, and scan the email, all these different things. It's this heterogeneous environment. You're trying to put round pegs into square holes continually, and I think that's where, and that's kind of, to me, that's sort of, I have almost like a Soviet mentality about it. I'm assuming, I really greatly respect Soviet technology. And what's interesting about Soviet technology is that they expect everything to break, right? Like there was that example from Soviet jets, right? So the Soviet jet, I forget, it was some version of the MiG, the air intake for takeoff was on the top of the wing. And so if you looked at a Soviet airfield, they were completely strewn with garbage, with bolts, everything like that, because as the MiG took off, it was getting its air from the top, and there was no risk of sucking in like a bolt off the airfield. And the Russians assumed, well, this makes sense, because in a war environment, someone's going to bomb our airfield, there's going to be debris everywhere, we can still take off. American jets are the opposite. They have to actually sweep the runways. I don't know if this is still true, but I guess at one time this was true. They have to actually walk the runways, sweep it, picking up absolutely every bolt, every nut, every like piece of garbage off the runway, because an American jet can't take off in that environment. It sucks the air in from the bottom. It would pick up a bolt, and that would just wreck the jet engine. So the analogy that I'm making there is that the real world of IT is actually like things are going to break. Things are going to be different. There's always going to be debris on your airfield when you're trying to take off. And yes, the IT guys will be there to pick up the debris or be there to help you, you know, repair your jet when you've sucked a bolt into it or be there when you need to plug in this service to that service that doesn't expect to work together.
So there,
go IT guys. Yeah. That's what we're here for. So that's the role. Maybe that's the role that we can still be, hopefully. We can be the people that plug things together.
By the way, you're listening to the Global Product Management Talk. This is our half-hour interstitial. I am Cindy Faye Solomon. You can follow me on Twitter at Cindy F. Solomon. I'm speaking with Scott Jackish. Is that how you pronounce your last name?
Jackish, yeah.
Jackish.
Yeah.
It is spelled J-A-C-K-I-S-C-H. And we will backpedal and fix all the misspellings out there. We'll have to check the
press. My father was adamant about keeping that C in there, which, you know, he had aspirations, of ethnic aspirations. You know, he wanted to stay ethnic, but, I mean, we're American. I would be actually fine with dropping the second C. I wouldn't care. What do I care?
Okay. And so I'm editing.
He's rolling in his grave as I say this.
I mean, we can talk about culture and ethnicity.
You want to get into? I'm all for just being American, but yeah. Anyway. So the do you want to get into future though?
Let's go future. And I just want to say, so we're getting some, you know, resonance with what you were talking about. You know, Gil says, with IT working out of the box, companies can specialize in core business. And certainly it is a goal. And, you know, we see that across the board. Let's get rid of the middleman.
Oh,
let's,
yeah.
Let's provide
do-it-yourself
ability
exactly.
On all aspects of these complex things that used to require a whole department,
right.
A whole room,
yeah.
A whole staff. And now we've made it easy. You can do it yourself. And, you know, in terms of that, we're getting rid of professionals. We're getting rid of experts who focused and specialized in that area.
Yeah.
And
they got rid of
need.
Yeah, that's true. They got rid of experts, too, when, you know, the cotton gin came along.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Well, I was even thinking of no one ever talked about word processing. You know, back in the day, there were whole departments in legal firms. There were whole floors of people who were, you know, manufacturing the text and the documents
okay. Yeah.
Into these word processing machines.
Sure, yeah.
And that has all gone away. Everyone now is their own word processor.
We don't even think about it.
Didn't know how to type. Right, no one ever thinks
I still
about
run into
that.
Those, actually.
last week, I think it was Secretary Day, and I was listening to a
they
rude,
this
awful,
is Administrative Assistant Day.
Yeah,
come on now.
It was a local channel, and they were just making fun of it, and, you know, it was just, look, those people still exist.
Yeah, okay.
And now they're virtual. You can you know, there's virtual admins.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a profession. It was something that, you know, mostly women went into and did become executive assistants, got paid really well. Now, they were actually running the business, but
absolutely.
In a support role.
As an IT guy, you know that the real power lays with the administrators,
yeah.
the executive admins.
You want to know what's really going on, or at a detailed, granular level. It is
yeah.
the administrators, and now, you know, they're called coordinators or
okay. I haven't heard
whatever.
That
yeah. yeah, so anyway, just ode to dying professions. So now, going to the future.
Going to the future.
What else will become, transformed into a do-it-yourself ability? Well, actually,
law is an interesting one.
Oh, yeah. Well, law is there. It's knowledge management, basically, right? You can have all your forms.
Yeah.
There's always something.
There's
to
a
be
creative
said.
Aspect to it too. Have you ever read John Barth?
No.
John Barth is actually a really interesting author. I forget which book this was. Maybe it was from Giles Goat Boy or something like that. I think he might be a Buffalo favorite. I'm from Buffalo, and I know he spent time at the University of Buffalo. But he had an example where a lawyer. It was a very simple case where two people were in a car accident. And someone was suing the other person, and the lawyer decided to go attach the driver of the other car as one of the defendants, because it was a chauffeured car. The other car was a chauffeured car, and by doing that, he sort of short-circuited the entire process. And maybe I'm not describing it right, but there was sort of this creative way in which things that are not obvious that are technically, technical paths through the law that are just non-obvious, that require almost trickery or guile to construct these sort of legal arguments or these legal approaches. And I don't think that it's one thing to do a text search. So paralegals, I think, will go away before lawyers will. It's one thing to do a text search and find all of the relevant case law. It's another thing to come up with some like devilishly clever way of interpreting it that is correct to the letter of the law, and then convincing a judge that should fly, you know?
Certainly.
What will go away? I'm not sure.
If expertise is associated with knowledge, and we have all the knowledge we need at our fingertips,
yeah.
What won't go away is the ability to apply things contextually correctly,
yeah.
To interpret things appropriately as opposed to literally.
Right.
And text-based information is limiting. Even capturing any kind of information in any medium, it still isn't live, real-time, and it's still limiting the experience.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So, this is what's happening now in education, and ed tech is a huge thing of
right.
necessity. And, mm-hmm. I just want to say that the driving force on all these things is never – I think they're couched in, this is going to improve procedures. This is going to improve return on investment.
Okay.
But really, the driving force is to decrease costs. Let's get rid of these professionals because they're too costly.
Labor costs. Let's get rid of labor costs.
The most expensive thing are the human costs.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing that we really want to pay for are developers, because developers are walking factories.
Right. And design. I think design too, right? Because my partner Gretchen has a web design business, 18 East Web Design. And I think that's a plug for Gretchen, 18east.com. Excellent designer. She's got a great eye. She's got great taste. She doesn't like to – she gets modest about that, but she has great taste. How do you write an algorithm for that? How do you write an algorithm for style? Do you know what I mean?
Right, but you can crowdsource design options, so you don't
crowdsource,
need to –
You can crowdsource – I mean, this goes back to, for me, like to this argument of how decisions can be made, crowdsourcing, because – I think there was this debate at one of these Foresight conferences between Mencius Moldbug and Robin Hanson. And Hanson, of course, has this idea of the decision markets, this idea of crowdsourcing decisions. But to me, I would imagine that a crowdsourced design could end up like a dog's breakfast. Like if you have all these different people, and Mencius Moldbug responded, and this guy's a total fascist. I think he's literally a royalist or something insane like that. But it's interesting to listen to these people because there are some arguments that are coherent. So he gave the example of a chess match. So imagine a chess master is playing an entire field of people who get to vote on what the next move is. And in that group, there could be any number of also grandmaster chess players. But the problem is that a chess game is a strategy, right? And you can't, the group or the crowd will veer wildly from approach to approach. And his argument was that one coherent chess master will beat any number of opponents because they won't be able to form a coherent strategy together. And this is you could apply the same thing to to government as well, which is frightening when you think about that.
Right. But so you're saying democracy is not certainly not efficient.
He argues that democracy is bad. I mean, I argue that democracy is fault-tolerant, but that's a whole other argument, right? Because you end up with a bad king, and then where are you, right? But democracy, we end up with a bad president, and you get rid of him and get another one, and, you know, end up with a bad congressman.
Well,
or
that's Congress checks of and balances used to be
in
about,
theory, that's
the
how
intention
it should work.
Of them.
Yeah, that's how it should work. But
yeah, So design, Wisdom of the Crowds.
Wisdom of the Crowds.
No,
yeah, I love that book, Wisdom of the Crowds, and I think there's a lot of validity to that idea that there is. I mean, I believe in democracy. I don't want to go back to a king, you know. But I think that it's interesting if you look at the U.S. Constitution, though, because these questions were actually they tried to address these questions in the U.S. Constitution, and when we think about it in this light, I have a lot more respect for that. This idea of having, they said, yeah, we need an executive branch. We need to have someone in charge, someone who can make a decision, someone who is responsible for making these decisions, individuals making these decisions. And then, of course, then there's the congressional bodies that, you know, will help, you know, write the laws, and then the judges to balance these I think when the executive branch and the judicial branch sort of serve to act as controls for when the populace just veers wildly in different directions. But in the absence of the all of that wisdom of those, you know, in theory that's what Congress would be, have wisdom of the crowd. You would just end up with some fascist state that couldn't be flexible and couldn't adjust.
Right. And that's why we don't want monopolies.
Yeah.
And that's...
That's why Comcast should definitely purchase Time Warner or what...
Should not.
Should not, yeah.
I mean, they're already a monopoly.
It's
depending on where you live here in California, you have a choice of one cable company.
It's just totally crazy.
Or not cable.
Yeah. Yeah.
One landline or no landline.
Yeah.
Which, that's going away, but...
Someone was telling me, so there is a big push. So in Oakland here, we actually have, out of pseudo room, there's this mesh, pseudo mesh approach. And this is a very hackerish thing to build this sort of mesh network that would be a peer-to-peer mesh network to sort of combat that. And they talk about on that mailing list, it's really interesting. I wish I could get down there more often because those are really smart people down there.
What mailing list is it?
It's a pseudo mesh or something like that, it's called. There's probably a website, it's called pseudo mesh, or it's pseudo mesh probably links to the pseudo room mesh project. But they talk about there, like I think it's Denmark or one of these like Norwegian countries where the city or a city built out an entire fiber network. Okay, so the city owned that infrastructure and they're treating it like plumbing or they're treating it like sewage or electric. Well, maybe not electrical infrastructure, but maybe it should be. It may be that the government's role, a good role for government, would be to build out the broadband infrastructure like optical, like fiber optic throughout the city and throughout the area, give everybody the fiber optic, and then just let internet providers come in and provide services using that backbone. And I forget what city this was, like maybe Copenhagen or something like that, but they actually ended up making money. Like it actually became like a money-making deal where the city, by having all of these, they turned it into a market, you know, infrastructure. And all of these providers would come in and they would give internet services using that existing backbone, sort of similar to the way that communication was deregulated, right? Where the big AT&Ts or the Ma Bells, they had to let other providers have access to those lines. And when that happened, we actually saw a lot of innovation in that space and reduction in cost. It might be that the way to go forward with broadband in the U.S. is to allow cities to build these infrastructures. But, you know, they're just fighting this tooth and nail. Do you know what I mean? It's horrifying to me when you see, like, North Carolina or one of these, states actually banning companies or cities and municipalities from competing with the cable companies and competing with the broadband companies. And that's just, it is, it's going to hold America back because other countries are moving way ahead. And we have some of the worst broadband in developed countries.
Yes, that's true. We have the slowest and it's, but I mean, that's a result of being first to market often.
But we don't have
we're not building new
monopolies,
infrastructure.
Right? Yeah, these monopolies though, are preventing other solutions, right? They're sort of muscling out with their regulatory capture and with their lobbying money, they're sort of muscling out alternative solutions to solve the broadband problem at the local level and bring that high speed to that last mile. And you got Google trying to get in there and, you know, disrupt things, but
So I'm looking at the Pseudo Room. How cool is that?
Pseudo Room is collaborative. Very, it's very cool. It's a hacker space.
Most importantly, we are all human beings interested in working towards a positive, social change.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's Oakland, right? That's
Oakland.
It's a hacker space that represents Oakland culture.
It's on 22nd Street.
Yeah.
Is that near the Oakland Hub? There's a Hub co-working space. It might be right there.
The Hub is further down, I think.
So yeah, the goal is to hack the planet.
Right.
And I'm looking at GitTip, which is, I'm going to check out GitTip for crowdsourcing sustainable crowdfunding.
Yeah. Okay. That's how they're funding it. That's right.
They're funding it.
I paid money into that. I think I gave them $5 a week or something. I forget what
it
is.
So how cool is that?
Yeah. No, the hacker spaces are great. We have Hacker Dojo down in the South Bay, and that, and that kind of does reflect more of that startup culture, that Silicon Valley culture.
And the maker movement.
Maker
Fair is coming up.
That's right.
It's on the startup product calendar.
I'm looking forward to that. I always
I won't be there this year.
The giant Tesla coil that plays music and stuff.
It is so cool.
That is cool.
Maker Fair is what going to computer trade shows used to be. But they brought it out to the family. So
there
anyone who makes anything from electronics to technology to games to moving vehicles, it is so cool. It is a carnival, a circus, a really bright and creative
fun people.
Yes. Very, very cool. And it's overwhelming. It's two days, and they keep extending it, and they keep spreading out further. And I think it's going to have to become a maker land.
It's going
to
be
that you could go to this
Burning
destination.
Man.
Yeah, totally, Burning Man.
Well, you see a lot of crossover there. You know, definitely.
Yeah, except Burning Man, you have to go out into the desert.
That's
and
not for
I
me.
Hate leaving
That
water.
Is not for me. I need civilization.
So I'm talking with Scott Jackish about many things.
This
would all fall under global megatrends, quote unquote.
Oh, megatrends. The megatrends. So that was actually at Foresight. I went to Foresight this year, and they actually had a guy.
Foresight is a futurist.
It's a futurist conference.
It's a singularity.
No, it focuses more. I think traditionally they were always on nanotech, right? And I think it came out of this Drexler idea that you would build these little tiny machines that could build things, you know. Things haven't quite gone, I think, the way people imagined that earlier on. I think it's more almost like a biological direction people were going, because we realized that the actual molecular machines that we see around us are biological, right? DNA and things like that. But there was this guy, Bannon Garrett of the Atlantic Council, gave a presentation at this Foresight conference. So they do cover beyond nanotech. They talk about futurist topics. And this guy gave this this Global Trends 2030, and this is a report by the National Intelligence Council. I wrote a blog post about this, which I think is really interesting. What they try to do is they try to just, and even though this is like an intelligence agency of the U.S. government, it's apparently widely respected. Even though they actually talk about the decline of the U.S., right? They talk about how the U.S.'s role in the world is going to go down. And that's interesting to hear the U.S. government telling the world that. But in that report, I thought that report was really, really good. It had an excellent, just one pager, if you go to that, it's called Global Trends 2030. But they talk about the demand for food, water, and energy, right? Because the world is going to become urbanization is going to be a huge trend that's going to happen. Where I think I forget what they said, like 50% of the world already is living in cities, and that's going to increase. And the demand for food, water, and energy is going to grow as we see this. The global population become more consumers, right? Because becoming richer means you consume more resources, and so these are trends that I think there's a huge amount of opportunity for people to go into, you know, how do we, how, because innovation is going to be needed there just to like keep the world going, to keep people alive, to keep, you know, the earth from being destroyed. We need to be innovative in how we produce food, how we provide clean water, and how we provide energy. I've done a lot of work with a company. I've done a lot of work in the energy field. The startup that I started at was an energy management software, and then they were acquired by this meter reading company. But then the CEO of that original company, John Wooler, started this company with it was out of an Israeli group, actually, called Luz, that built these solar energy arrays. And, you know, Bright Source Energy was the company they created, and that created these, you know, they actually just went online this past year with this Ivanpah project, and I'm very proud that I was part of that, building out the IT infrastructure for that. That is, I think, the largest thermal solar solution in the world. I don't know all the specs on it, but it's basically you have all these mirrors, and the mirrors focus light onto a boiler, and then the boiler just pushes steam through a turbine. You know what I mean? I like to think of it as almost Soviet, because it uses essentially what almost all power generation uses, which is steam. You know, that's how nuclear is, that's how coal plants are, that's how all these plants are. They use the steam, and then it goes through a turbine. So they're taking this sort of, you know, well-understood technology, and then they're just using the sun to heat up to provide the heat. They've had a lot of challenges, but you know, the CEO has moved on and things like that. But what's interesting is that a lot of the people from that space are going into storage now, and so that's one of the things that I see as a huge trend in energy. I'm just seeing that in the businesses that I'm seeing spawn up out of, you know, the diaspora, if you will, of Bright Source Energy. These people are going into energy storage because the sun doesn't shine 24/7, right? And so if you have a way to take that energy and store, and we're going to need that with these renewable resources, as we bring more and more renewable sources of energy online, we need a way to capture that energy and store it, because you can't, you know, that's sort of an unsolved problem right now, and to efficiently store large amounts of energy on like industrial scales, like an industrial scale battery, or you know, that sort of thing. I think there's a huge opportunity there. But I think that there's a huge opportunity for – the world needs this, right? The world needs entrepreneurs to step into this gap and come up with these solutions for energy that are going to not destroy the world, so that we can have all these people, you know, improve their quality of life, all these billions of people that are around in the world now. I mean, there's some horrible thing, like half the people in the world live on less than $1,000 a year or something insane. And so but poverty is dramatically decreasing. And as that decreases, we need to provide these solutions. And there's going to be money there too. I mean, you know, if you come up with the you know, a lot of the things people talk about at Foresight are in these nanoscale devices are like water filters. Or filters that would be good for filtering water, you know, because they have these pores that are at the nanoscale or something like that. But you know, if you come up with a super cheap way to filter water, and you can solve a lot of these problems, you know, that's going to solve a lot of problems for people in the developing world, of a way to a cheap filter that cleans water. We need that, you know, and the same goes for food. We need the types of solutions. I don't know if they're going to be like, we talked about this before, growing meat in a petri dish. What is it called? I forget. There's a clever phrase for it. But, you know, producing, and even PETA is all in favor of that. They're all in favor of sort of vat-grown meat, because no animal is killed. You know, you just sort of take some stem cells or whatever from a cow, and you could grow like an entire, you know, huge, like undulating mass of like muscle tissue in a vat, which is sort of a horrifying thing to imagine, but no cow was killed for that. And then you chop that up and people have protein. These kind of solutions, I think, will be what feed the world, right? I mean, because we need to do it more efficiently than in a way that doesn't destroy the environment. That's when I think of global megatrends, those three issues are at the top of the list. And I mean, this is what's identified by a lot of the experts that go and look at this stuff. And I'm, you know, and I feel like I'm I'm drawn to that myself. So I see these opportunities for myself to work in that field, and that's where I go to. You know, like I can make choices of who I consult with. You know, I can consult with, you know, defense contractors building death rays, or I can go and work with the energy people that are trying to store energy. And that's when I make moral decisions in my own life. Like, that's the direction I want to go in. I want to go in the direction of, let's build solutions for energy. Let's build solutions to keep people alive. And in a way that's sustainable and doesn't blow the world up.
Excellent. Excellent. What a great summary of
I could go on. I'm going to keep yakking.
It's been all over the place. But let's build solutions that contribute to a sustainable future. And
that's up to us. You know, yeah. It's up to the innovators. I mean, I'd like to think of myself as an innovator, but I'm not one of these real, you know, people that come up with, you know, I'm not one of these real hackers, these real startup founders. You know, I want to help those people. I want to help those people to build that.
You want to enable them to do what they're doing.
I can be like the, you know, the support staff.
Yeah. So, and that is the essence of what these discussions are all about. I mean, why bother unless we're making a difference in a positive way?
Yeah, you want meaning, right?
Right. We want meaning.
We all need meaning in our lives. You know.
Right. Well, you know, building something from nothing is meaningful.
Yes.
But sustaining that and building community around it and engaging other people in it and taking it to the next level where it makes a greater difference. That's what the challenge
is. Something bigger than yourself.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And I think that's why people are drawn to product management. They want to make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
They may be the makers. They may be the hackers. But they're also looking and seeing how can they facilitate something happening, bringing people together and bringing that product from inception, shepherding it all the way out the door and scaling businesses.
Yeah.
And it's a constant challenge, and there's a constant need for retooling, staying, becoming the T-shaped person and
the
expanding.
T-shaped person?
Yes, you know, having both width and breadth.
Oh, okay.
So if we stood together, I think we might make a T. Scott is very tall. I am not. So I didn't know, you know, when we're sitting down, I don't notice how tall you are.
That's good. We can see eye to eye.
Yeah. So you've been listening to the Global Product Management Talk. We have had a great discussion with Scott Jackish. He's a principal at Globalized Networks. He's also a futurist, a thinker, and a mover and shaker in the in the Oakland
I am
area.
Moving, shaking, yes.
Yes. So I have follow the tweets as well as I'll post the resources where I've collected some of the content that Scott has shared with us today. And this broadcast will be available in the archives at blogtalkradio.com/PRODMGMTTALK. And it will also be available on iTunes, on Stitcher, and just search for PRODMGMTTALK, as well as on Scott's blog and at the startupproduct.com. So Alicia says she agrees people get into product management because they want to make things happen. So thank you to our tweeters, and I'll do a sweep to see if other people are commenting. Usually on demand when people are listening, or they'll see the tweets. There's a bit of a delay. But, hey, thanks to Reddit DIY for favoring the tweet about they probably have an automatic. If they see a mention of DIY, they just automatically. But thanks. They like the comment about DIY infiltration of many professions. And thanks to Zach Trader, Dominique Carroll for following, Chinmoy, Miquel Alvarez. We have a bunch of people who are retweeting and chiming in. So thanks for joining us today. Join us next week where we will be discussing with the author of a book on culture and changing the culture. So just follow us at blogtalkradio.com facebook.com/PRODMGMTTALK to get pinged on our upcoming events. Also, we are syndicating the Cascade Insights Competitive Intel podcast. They're available in the archives, and they will get some new podcasts uploaded, so you can listen to those as well in the stream. This is Cindy Faye Solomon. Thanks to our sponsors, EAIPMM, Webcast Digest, Startup Product, and check out startupproduct.com/under meetups to find a meetup community near you or bring one to your community where we get together to discuss important issues affecting managing products, product success, and the product management professions. So thanks to BZ Lewis. Thanks to Blame Sally for the great music. And thanks, Scott Jackish, for joining us.
Thank you. It's been fun.
And have a great week.
Lost to a thief on a dry winter leaf.